Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tatman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good. Welcome to a World of Good podcast. My name is Andrew Gale, and I have the pleasure of sitting here with Kathleen Achi, who works at Fairfax Church and is going to tell us a little bit about her role here, but so excited to have a conversation about how we think about storytelling in our churches. Stories have an incredible importance and potential impact on people that are a part of our church, but how we do that is incredibly important, and I'm excited to talk to Kathleen more about that. But before we jump in, Kathleen, tell us a little bit about yourself, your role, and where you serve.
Yeah, so thanks, Andrew, for having me be here today. I have been at Fairfax Church for the last 20 years and have served in basically in caring for the folks of our church. We have a good-sized congregation, and so get to do that, get to care for our missionaries as well, and get to care for our staff, doing staff development and leadership. And boy, lots of stories in all the years that I've been doing this.
Absolutely. When you're walking with people that are processing lots in their life, when you talk about caring for people in your community, is that counseling? Does that fit into that mold as well? I mean, what does that look like?
Sure. So I'm more into the pastoral counseling piece, of course. We do have a lay counseling team that's here at the church, as well as other volunteers, lots of volunteers that take care of people. So it's constantly hearing stories, holding those stories, because they're so sacred.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of, I almost feel like the vault for stories in our church of knowing lots of things and trying to figure out what are the stories that we can tell, and what are the stories that are still in a place where we need to hold them.
Yeah. So you've been here for 20 years. Have you only served at Fairfax? Did you serve anywhere prior to that? And have you always served in this capacity?
Always in this capacity.
Wow.
And just at this church.
That's awesome. What an incredible tenure of time, you know, in one location. I think that's awesome, especially in a culture, in a world that I think speed and change is so prevalent. To have people that stay, I think also gives you an opportunity to tell stories that other people may not be aware of because of your engagement here over a longer period of time.
I think that some folks kind of tell me that I kind of hold the institutional history of things. So, you know, we have records of whatever, but it's usually me that people come to and go, do you know, and can we, and, you know, like all the background of, you know, something.
So, because having something written out and having kind of an ethos behind something are two very different things, right?
I mean,
you could read the email thread or whatever, read the report that came out, but understanding how that actually impacted people or impacted the community, that's incredibly valuable. Mm. I'm working in an organization that started, you know, over 120 years ago, 130 years ago, we have a lot of those things where we're like, does someone here remember why we made this decision this long ago? Well, Nate and I had the idea to do a podcast about storytelling because of the discussion that you led at one of our missions leader roundtable a few years ago. The idea came about as we discussed what it looked like to engage in ethical storytelling. That's one of the ways that this gets described, meaning that there are stories to tell, but how do we tell stories that don't do harm to those that are part of the story, right? Sometimes there are stories that would be really impactful and we want to tell those stories, but in so doing, we may actually harm those that are a part of the stories, or they may just not be our stories to tell.
Right.
So this is, I think, especially meaningful for anyone who has ever gone on a missions trip. I mean, how many of us get back from one of those missions trip experiences and we bring our slideshow of pictures and we show all of the things that we did. And sometimes those pictures are of people we've asked to take their picture of, but many of them are just pictures we've taken. And so I think that whether the stories are told publicly at a church service or in small groups or even just with families, the stories that we tell matter, because in all of them, we're encountering other people. And in all of them, we're making decisions about how we're going to either humanize or dehumanize people in those conversations. But before we get into kind of some of the specifics and start talking about some of that, can you just talk to me about why do stories matter?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, stories are the things that kind of make us human, mm-hmm. right? They're healing. They're sacred. They explain our experiences. They give us a picture. They evoke questions. They kind of inform us on things that we don't understand. You know, we may not be able to go to Tanzania, but you see a few pictures and hear a few stories. You weren't there, but it broadens your world.
Absolutely.
And so that's really important. Even here at home, there's issues that although we live in one community, another community is experiencing some things that we're not a part of. Mm-hmm. And yet by hearing those stories, it influences our own narrative, the way we relate to the community, the way we can influence, the way we can pull the levers yeah. to help other folks. I think yeah. that's really important. And I think that it teaches us in ways that, you know, in ways that we just don't expect.
Yeah.
It teaches us in ways, yeah.
So. Because having somebody tell you should do this, or hearing it in a story, it impacts us in ways that I think are really different. I mean, that's why I think Jesus used storytelling in the ways,
exactly.
I mean, because I think that we can relate to stories because they are part of our human experience.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's a chemical in the brain, oxytocin, and when we hear stories, that chemical gets released.
Oh, interesting.
It's called the bonding hormone or the love hormone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so when we hear a story that evokes that kind of emotion, it bonds us to that people, that people group, that experience in a way that, you know, we wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
That's so fascinating. Some of the science behind it.
Yeah.
As we think about stories and storytelling, what makes a good story? What are the elements of a good story, kind of in your perspective?
Yeah. So think about a picture of a photojournalist
yeah.
showing up at a crime scene. Mm. One photojournalist is going to be taking pictures of the crime itself.
Mm.
Pictures that we're not going to see, but pictures that are going to inform and help people solve the crime that has happened. Mm. But the other photojournalist shows up to inform the community of what's happened.
Mm.
And the pictures look very different, right?
Hmm.
I mean, one set of pictures is this graphic sort of horror that has happened, but so necessary. And the other photos are actually telling a story, a narrative of which we need to be informed and hear about and to have empathy with.
Yeah.
So I think a good story is one that is able to give factual information, is able to help us empathize with the situation, help us to be sympathetic with our fellow man, right? So those are the good components of the story.
Yeah.
I think the hard things are, is where is the line that crosses over to the point where we have exploited not only the story, but the people in it, the situation.
Yeah.
And we have to be so careful of that. We often see things in the newspaper, pictures in a newspaper, or hear stories where we just really have to be so careful of what that does to us when we hear that story. Are we getting the right picture from that? Has it exploited the people that are involved in a way that they will not recover from?
Yeah, that's such a hard balance to strike because, you know, stories have an opportunity to evoke the, you know, you just talked about oxytocin and have an opportunity to invoke a bonding and a desire to connect with something. And we want that to happen when we're talking about opportunities for people to go and serve. But we have to do that in a way that doesn't take advantage of those that are a part of that story. Historically, stories have encouraged people to engage. I mean, I think about, you know, so many of those that engage in missions can point back to experiences they have or stories that they heard. I mean, the missionary biography, you know, that was a huge part of the, you know, 100 years ago of really talking about what was going on, that cause people to say, I want to be a part of that, and a huge impetus for people to engage. Mm-hmm. So there is value in those stories.
Absolutely.
But certainly those can be some of those that were very, that looked at people that the other and tended to look at them as this strange, you know, bizarre. And that's what, so do those stories need to stop, or how do we engage those stories in ways that are healthy?
Right. So no, they shouldn't stop. And we can still continue to tell them. You know, there's a difference between sitting around, coming back from a trip and sitting with a group of people, a small group of people, and telling your experience, right? Yeah. And you even talk about this in some of the things that you've done where, you know, you have to have the story for different people, right?
Yeah.
And so for one group of people, like your parents or what, you know, family, your spouse, your small group, and you're telling the really, like, the big things that happened, how you were affected. And then you might have the story for the congregation where it's a little bit different. And I think the narrative, we need to fit the narrative, the story, for the group that we're telling. So if you're sitting in your small group, you can certainly kind of share at a bigger level. I think that when you're in a congregational setting, you need to kind of level that story up a little bit and talk about that in a different way. I think, you know, let's say we're telling stories. Let's say there's a great story. Maybe this is not a mission story, but it's a great story in a church that something happened in someone's life. And we understand that stories are in process. This side of heaven, the end of the story does not happen.
Yes.
And so, for instance, we had a woman a number of years ago, a young woman, who came and told a really powerful story to our congregation, and it was recorded. And, you know, the recording of that, like, who knows where that goes? Even if it gets archived, it just kind of floats out there somewhere. And a couple years later, she contacted me, and she said, you know, that story is still floating out on the website. And she said, I said some things that I would like to. She said, not that they weren't true, and at the time, that was the appropriate story to share. But I would sure like to be able to not have that piece of the story about things that happened with my family that are now healed to constantly be out there.
Yeah.
And so we have to be careful of when we allow a story to float somewhere that we don't increase just the possibility of that story becoming different than we had first imagined it to be.
Well, I think with technology, that is, I mean, that becomes,
biggest thing.
Yeah, it becomes such a huge reality. And I wonder, you know, during the COVID pandemic season, as many churches went online, whether that is something that churches were aware of. Because it's one thing for me to stand up in front of a church and share something that is not going to be broadcast online. That's going to be for that church. And even then, I think we have to be cautious what we say. But now that everything gets put online, those same stories are now able to be reached. Of the people that we talk about may be hearing those stories if it's somebody that we reconnected with globally. And I don't know that we're always fully aware of that. I mean, I don't know how many times I've traveled to, I mean, this has happened a lot. And actually, it just happened recently with a pastor in Africa who said that many of his people in his congregation are listening to pastors in the United States.
Yes.
And he's having to kind of combat some theological thoughts that are challenging the way that their congregation is thinking about their call and what they're doing. But the access to that is so prevalent. And they'll say, well, this pastor in the U.S. said this. And that becomes a real struggle. And certainly that's an issue theologically, but I think it is with stories as well. And we talk about people that we're engaging with globally. If we don't recognize that, if that goes on Facebook, if that goes on social media, like, that becomes pervasive. If we've connected with these friends while we're in these countries on those kind of social media platforms, what would they think if, you know, if they saw that, you know? And I think that's something we're sometimes not always aware of. But one of my professors said, you know, if I'm going to tell a story, I want to ask, if I'm sitting in the room with that person, would I tell that story the same way?
Exactly.
And I think that's a really interesting way to think about this. She was someone who worked primarily with people that were experiencing homelessness.
Right.
And she said, I want to know that if I'm sitting with one of my brothers and sisters that are experiencing homelessness and I'm sharing a story that they've shared, would they be okay with the way that I share
that? Exactly. I think we have to be so, so careful of how those things are portrayed. And I think, you know, when we're sitting with someone, especially with someone who really is listening, who's compassionate towards the person telling the story. You know, they're the right people in the room for sure. But you might say things that you might not say in another context, right? And afterwards you go, I can't believe I did. And now we've re-traumatized someone, especially if it's a story where there's trauma involved. Yeah. You know, the court system is very careful to not bring someone in to tell a story again to re-traumatize them. I think, you know, there's other things in place that we are just really, we're careful about. Counselors do not have people constantly repeating stories to re-traumatize them. They don't record things on purpose. And so when we do that, we have to be so careful of that particular story, of making sure if it's heard 3 months from now, does it still sound the same? A year from now. And I think, too, we have to think about the stories that we do put out there and, you know, how do we retract them? Can we?
Yes.
How do we retract them? Is there some kind of a consent that we say to the person telling the story, this will only be shared here and then we're pulling it back, you know?
Life cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think we have to just think about those things, you know, about the stories that we're telling.
You brought up a second ago the idea of multiple stories and something that I mentioned, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I want to say that I think we need to go farther with that. So when I conceptualized the idea for, as a part of our kind of trip training to talk about having multiple stories, the idea was having these shorter version, a middle length version, a longer version that you tell, so that somebody who says, how was your trip? And they really just want to hear fine, you know, you don't bore them. But I think what you're bringing up is equally more important than that. And that is knowing what specific context you have to speak in. It's not just about length. It's about the appropriateness of the information that's being shared. And so I think that's something we have to think about, not just how do we share something that's captivating, but how do we share something that is contextually appropriate for the people we're talking to. I mean, even thinking about if I'm going to go speak to a Sunday school class of kids about my experience, I need to contextualize that differently than if I'm speaking to adults. And I think that that's, we recognize that in age demographics, but I don't think we always recognize that if I'm speaking to a large church, I have to contextualize that differently because I can't give the details that I may need to for that person to fully understand the picture. And the quick picture that I'm giving is not an accurate or a fair one. And so making sure that we think through how we make sure that our stories are set within context.
Absolutely. And I think another piece of that for which you deal with all the time is the cultural context. Yeah. We hear things as Americans very differently than other, you know, so what is normalized in a particular people group is not at all, doesn't sound normal in our context. So sometimes we're given 2 minutes to tell a story and that's not enough time.
Yeah.
So we have to either broaden the time frame and insist that the time frame be broadened. Or if you want the 2-minute version, you're not going to get anything that's, you know, extremely effective. And so I think, you know, we just have to think through this so much better than we do.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you also made a comment earlier about telling my story. And so I want to ask about that. So you made the comment that often, you know, when we're in those groups, we shouldn't think about necessarily, I can't remember how you said it. Not that we shouldn't think about, but we have to be cautious that we're not sharing other people's story, but we can share our story in that. So how do we do that in a way? Because so many of our stories overlap. You know, if I'm sharing my story, when does that story impede on somebody else's life? Does that make sense?
Like, absolutely, sure.
How would you think about that?
Yeah. So for instance, case in point, right now we are in the process of helping a Afghan family left Kabul. We were in that a whole, you know, like really deeply trying to get them out, State Department involved, all of those sorts of things. They're now in a safe place, but now we're trying to get them back here to the States because they originally were from here, happened to be in Kabul at the time. Big story. So when people ask me my involvement in that, what I say matters because if I talk about that in broad strokes, that's easy. But if someone starts asking me the details, it could easily put them and their route back to the States in danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't talk about the people I'm talking to. I can't mention why this person has been moved from this facility to this facility. I can't talk about who I've talked to on the ground. And I can't tell really anybody that right now, right? I
mean,
you know, I'm just kind of like managing this conversation. But people are intrigued. They want to know because this is the story right now that is in the forefront of things. And you're hearing, you know, on a news broadcast on CNN what they're portraying. But what is the human story?
Yeah.
We're not having contact with, we're just telling the broad story. We're not having contact necessarily with too many individuals. So when you meet somebody that has this very specific story that is intriguing, you want to hear every detail.
Yeah.
But those details can't be given, and not yet.
Yeah.
And not until, you know, this family is here again and I'm standing alongside of them and we're telling the story together.
Yeah. And at that point in time, you would feel comfortable sharing that story.
Yes.
And again, I another piece of that is that that's one story amongst their longer story, I'm sure. I mean, like you can tell that story from start to finish, because when they're standing there with you, that piece of the story, you know, has been finished. And that was one of the things that I think was really intriguing to me that you shared when we discussed this at our Missions Leader Roundtable, was that one of the challenges is that we tend to tell stories as if they're completed or finished when they're not, especially when we're talking about people's experience of transformation or change, you know, which are impactful stories. When somebody says, you know, I used to experience homelessness and now I'm not, or I used to be addicted to drugs and now I'm not, like those stories, I mean, those are the oxytocin. Those are the ones that get, you know, those are the ones that get us engaged and wow, that's incredible. But oftentimes we tell them as if they're complete. And the story of the Afghan, this Afghan family that's getting back, there will be a completion to that you can tell.
Exactly.
But a lot of the stories that are really impactful are those that are longer term. So can you share insights with us that you shared during that? Like, what are some of the, how do you process that? How do you go about telling a story knowing that it's not finished, that we can't wrap it up with a bow?
Yeah. You know, I can remember a number of years ago, there was a baseball player who had become a believer. And, you know, the Christian community just like capitalized on this poor man, like just like he's one of us now, you know, and that whole thing. And he had a past.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he talked about that and he gave testimony at some Christian banquet. And it was just this really big deal. And then a number of months later, the same struggle that this man had previously, he had again. And I can remember so clearly that the Christian community in certain parts were kind of like, how could he do this to us?
Yeah.
We put him out there.
Yeah.
We said, you know, and the thing is, it's like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
Like you kind of exploited this person's story because they were famous. This person came, shared their story in a really raw and real way. And then when he fell, you left him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what the story was. They left him. Hmm. And they were just like, well, we're not gonna talk to you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a real believer. And I think that, you know, we do such a disservice when we ask for people's stories too soon, when we don't give them a chance to really process things, or when we say, hey, we know that this is a beginning for you. And we have to be part of the narrative that says to who's ever hearing the story that this is just the beginning, or this is the middle piece.
Yep.
This is on this side of heaven. This story is not going to be complete.
Yeah.
And I think we have to keep reminding the hearers of the story that that is, in fact, true.
Here's a slice, and this slice fits into this longer narrative, but we're only getting this little slice. And our slice ends today where we are, and it continues on from there. And so we don't know what comes after that.
Exactly.
And I think that, you know, the story you just described to me is concerning on so many levels, but I think it's really concerning because it sounds to me, whether intentionally or not, like the Christian community was using this person as a tool to, like this is a tool we're going to use to encourage other people. But again, whether intentionally or not, didn't see him as a human, saw him as a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of questions do we have to be asking to make sure that we're not doing that? I mean, because I struggle with this, like as someone who preaches, right, or teaches at a church, you want to tell stories that relate to what you're sharing, right? You're sharing about transformation. So you want to find a story of transformation. But at times that story can be just our tool to get our point across and not really setting that, not being fair to that person. So what kind of questions do we need to be asking as people who are sharing stories to make sure that our intentions in sharing that story are good? I mean, I don't know how else to ask that any better. That's one of my struggles.
Right, right. So I think, you know, there's been authors for forever who have written stories, who have shared stories, and they were able to kind of couch the story in a framework of being able to still tell the story, but not give the details.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like you're telling the story and going, this story is about Joey's on the front row today, you know, or this story is about someone in our congregation, but I'm not going to share their story, you know, their name. But I mean, I think you can use the story, change enough of the details.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can do that. I think we can ask permission.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we don't ask permission of people to see what parts of this can we share. And again, I think it's just, you know, you said before, this is a slice. We're not going for the whole thing here.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
There's no easy answers on any of this.
I know.
There are no easy answers on how to do this.
Come on, tell us exactly what we have to do. No. I think that's really helpful. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier and you just brought up again is permission or consent. When people are traveling to other countries, would you recommend that before any pictures are taken, before any stories are told, that consent is given? What does that look like? I mean, are there any rules for the teams that come out of here? I don't know whether you're aware of that in terms of what they can and can't share, or things that you would just recommend for us, you know, as people that go and travel and have these experiences that we want to share. How do we garner consent?
Yeah. So my daughter was a photojournalist on the mission field years ago.
Okay.
And the organization that she worked with was very specific about the kinds of pictures that you're taking.
Yeah.
That, you know, taking a full-on picture with a child in living in a very difficult situation, you could easily take a picture of their feet.
Yes.
You can look at different ways. You can take pictures of hands. You can take pictures of, you know, of the surrounding community, those sorts of things. Now, if we just take a picture of, like, the landscape, it doesn't give what we want, right? You want the humanizing pieces
to
that.
Yeah.
And so you have to figure out a way to do that that's not this full-on sort of, this is what's going on, isn't this horrible, you know, because that's kind of what the picture, it reminds me of the story, you know, or the commercial, you know, we see this at night, like if you're up after midnight and you're watching a bad movie, you know, the commercial that comes on inevitably is that one with the animals that are in bad situations that people find. The background music is In the Arms of an Angel, right?
I was about ready to start singing it.
You know? and you're just seeing this, and it's just like, you want to write that check out, you know? And I'm sure that if they just show the bright side of, here's all the people that have adopted the dog, that's not compelling.
Yep.
But is there a middle ground somewhere that we're not exploiting even an animal, you know, that we're doing this in a way that keeps the humanity for the folks that we are working with. And so I think, you know, maybe talking to, like, if a team goes out, having the conversation with them about the kinds of pictures, the kinds of stories, not recording things, you know, unless you have permission and you're recording the right people who can tell the stories in the right way. I think it's really hard. You know, sometimes there's a tragedy in a community and you can just see the journalist bringing up the someone who doesn't understand what's happening and they're telling the story and you're just thinking, oh man, you're going to go home and regret this, right?
Yeah.
Like this is going to be on the news cycle for a while.
Yep.
And you've told that story in a way that you would tell your mother or, you know, or your brother or someone going back, but you wouldn't tell the world that way.
Yep.
And so I think we just need to talk to our teams, talk to the people who are out on the field and share that.
And sometimes journalists do that purposefully to get those stories, you know, and I think sometimes as church people, we can whether, again, intentionally or unintentionally, do the same thing, you know, try to get these stories that we think will be, you know, be captivating. But I think that, yes, I think that the idea of taking pictures of things other than people's faces, I think about as a parent, if someone drove into my neighborhood and took a picture of my kid, I would be incredibly concerned.
Exactly.
Like, that's not okay. Like, right. You need to talk to me. But how many times when we travel do we work in communities where we may see kids that come to a VBS or a church service, but we don't see their parents or know their parents? And so by taking pictures, aren't we doing the same thing? Like driving into somebody's neighborhood and taking a picture of a kid, which again just sounds absurd in our own community, but we don't, for whatever reason, we don't implant that same idea as we travel globally. Mm. And so I just think that's something we have to stop and go, okay, would this be uncomfortable for me if someone did this to me in my home context?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's it's easy for us, again, not to think about that when we're traveling. I think one of the things that can be complicated is that we hear this about, you know, these concerns and, you know, being raised, and we can go to the other end of the spectrum and say, oh, well, I'm just not going to tell any stories at all. But we need these stories because these stories relate back to who we are, to our faith, and how we're connected to one another. And so what's a way that we can focus our stories that, you know, continue on an ethical lines that allow us to be ethical in the way we're telling them, but also tell those stories that are important that do captivate and engage people?
Yeah, so I think we need to make sure that our focus is on what is God doing in this person's life, in this community, in this particular context with this issue. What is God doing? Not what's the church doing, what's the mission organization doing, what am I doing, you know, but what is God doing in the midst of this? And if we focus on that, it'll be on all the right foundation, the right pieces of this story without having that exploitation piece brought up. It will be sacred, it will be holy, and that's really what we want in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And I think that the question that comes to my mind as you say that is, who's the hero of the story, right? It's so easy to put ourselves as the hero or the protagonist. And and just like when we hear stories, you know, there's a context, there's a setting, there are the characters. We have to think about who we're putting in those roles as the characters. Who's the protagonist? And if God is the hero of the story rather than us, then that takes away that exploitative opportunity, I think, that when it can easily become about us trying to tell how great we are rather than telling the story of God's incredible work in a community. There's an interesting graph that I have seen that's from a book by Andy Crouch, and he puts on a spectrum of authority versus vulnerability and talks about the levels of, it's on a quadrant. So, you know, high authority, high of vulnerability versus low authority and low of vulnerability. And as Americans, we go into these settings, these contexts with very high authority and very low vulnerability. When we go in and capture somebody's story, it's very easy for us to be in the place of power and not the place of having any vulnerability. But the people we're going to go have conversations with, the people we're traveling and visiting, are often high vulnerability and very low authority. And so I think if we think about that and recognize that as we tell this story, how do we help the people that are in, the people that we're encountering that are in vulnerable situations, not feel vulnerable, not be made vulnerable by the story, but lift up the ways that they're engaging, the way that God's engaging in that community, and trying to flip that power dynamic so that it's not about us exerting power on somebody else, but allowing their story to be shared in a way that represents them and that is the way they would want it to be represented.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. That's a great thought. Yeah. Great thought. Yeah.
Well, Kathleen, thank you so much for this time today. Thanks for sharing with us, for challenging us. And hopefully as we step aside and engage in cross-cultural work, we can be reminded of where we are in the story that we're a part of and how we can tell the good stories of God's work around the world without exploiting, without making people vulnerable, without manipulating, but by truly bringing people into the good work that God's a part of. So thank you so much for this.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.